From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by Thoroughgraph, everything you need to win. Visit Thoroughgraph.com. The new Colonial Downs and the Virginia Equine Alliance. Hill and Dale, home of perennial standouts. Curlin, Kitten's Joy, Midnight Loot, and emerging stallions, Violence, Iron, and Army Mule. Visit hillanddalefarms.com for consignments at the 2019 yearling sales. Case Supply, the kitchen and bath professionals across upstate New York. Showrooms in Syracuse, Auburn, and Amsterdam. Make your dream kitchen and bath a reality. Visit casesupplyinc.com. And McMahon of Saratoga, standing breakout stallion, Central Banker. Number one in New York and among the nation's leading young sires. Visit McMahonThoroughbred.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning, live from Saratoga. I'm Seth Merrill. Typically, in the other seat is Steve Bick. We are sending him well wishes. Had some eye surgery earlier this week. I'm sure he's watching the show. And Steve, on the front side the last few days, both familiar faces and strangers have been asking for you. Steve, with the eye surgery, I've talked to some people over the last few days who have had similar things done. I guess you have to stay immobilized for 10 days or a couple of weeks. I texted Steve yesterday. He's hoping, well, knock wood, hoping to be back in here next week. So we'll look forward to that return here to Loose on the Lead, where you can, again, make fun of my wardrobe. But this week I'm safe as far as that is concerned. But again, Steve, wish you a speedy recovery. Today's show, though, we will be joined a little bit later on by Jamie Roth, part owner of Covfefe. Nice performance from that three-year-old filly yesterday in the test. Also, Dora Delgado from the Breeders' Cup. Talk a little Breeders' Cup and what the plans are as far as she's the VP of Racing and Nominations and how they pull some horses in for the big event each year. But top of the show, happy to be joined this morning by the winning trainer of the Whitney yesterday, McKenzie. Big performance, Bob Baffert. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you join us. And yesterday, Whitney, and it was also Mary Lou Whitney Day. There was a lot of pink in the crowd, as that was her favorite color. Did you ever have a chance to meet Mary Lou?
Oh, yeah, I love Mary Lou. She was so, you know, she always made it a point to come find us. And she loved my wife, Jill. And she was just always, you know, she's just so passionate about the sport. And so she was always just a very friendly but she, like, when I won the Triple Crown races and everything, she always made a point to,
oh, really?
To find me and congratulate me. And so it was really sad that she wasn't here, because when I brought the horse here, I thought, man, I've never won the Whitney. It'd be great. I could get to see Mary Lou. And, you know, and then when she passed, it was the first thing I thought, oh, she's not going to be there.
Yeah, it was. It certainly, we missed her in the winner's circle, because she was always down there for the trophy presentation and got inducted into the Hall of Fame appropriately on Friday morning. So that was nice.
That was there for
her. John gave a nice speech.
It was pretty emotional, and, you know, poor guy, but he got through it.
Yeah, it was I spoke to him in the winner's circle yesterday. I said, you did a great job, and he said it was tough to get through. But, again, Miss Mary Lou. Last night, after the Whitney, I'm curious, what's a trainer do in Saratoga after winning a big grade one like that? You got a restaurant recommendation?
Well, we went to the Ciro's last night, went there, and so had a nice meal and just chilled out. And then I hit Ben and Jerry's on the way home. I got to hit Ben and Jerry's.
It's perfect.
You know, you got to hit Ben and Jerry's with it. I have a coat and tie. I'm the only guy with a coat and tie at Ben and Jerry's.
Was there a big line? Because downtown was a zoo last night.
It was crazy. It was crazy. And we're staying downtown by the, it's called the Pavilion Hotel. And luckily our room is like in, but my the other side, the other bedroom, my son Bodie, my 14-year-old son Bodie there, and he said, Dad, the parties, I can hear there was a lot of yelling about 2 a.m. and a lot of going on, but it's crazy. But that's good, you know.
Absolutely.
That's why they come up. Saratoga it reminds me of, I used to train quarter horses in Arizona. It was called Prescott, Arizona. It was like a summer, it was like a mini Saratoga, and everybody would go up there, and then afterwards they had a thing called Whiskey Row, all these old Western bars, and the place from Phoenix, Arizona, they get out of the heat, it's up in the pine trees, and it was like the same, you know, same thing, but yeah. the track wasn't too nice, but I didn't know any better.
But the after track was made it all worthwhile. Let's go back. Let's take a look yesterday at the Whitney. We'll pull him right out of the gate. Take us through some of your thoughts. He went off as the 4-5 favorite. Mike Smith put him out there right in the mix early. McKenzie is going to be the number 6 horse. A late run. 7 Yoshida gets that one second. Vina Rosa, the number 5, third. Preservationist, the number 8, ran fourth in here. But again, he was right in the mix early. As they get to the final turn, Mike Smith starts to make his move, and down the stretch, a really impressive run. A 111 buyer awarded after the performance yesterday. What were your thoughts as the race was running?
Well, I love he broke really well. He got him out there, and he had him in a nice spot. And I got a little bit worried when I saw the 8 horse, Preservation, when I saw that he went after us, and I thought, I hope Mike doesn't just go toe-to-toe with him, because if he does, we're not going to be around. And then he grabbed him right there, and he just took him back, got on the outside, and then he got him into nice, you know, most good horses, you want to get him in a nice, relaxed stride where they're, and that way they breathe easier, you know, when you're in there tight or whatever. You know, they won a nice rhythm. He got him in a nice rhythm there. So I was really happy with the way he was in his spot down the backside. And when I heard 47.4, I thought, well, that's not too bad. You know, 46 would have been a little taxing. And the track hasn't been really like a speed bias type. You know, they've been coming from off of it a little bit. But Mike just, you know, sat there. He rode him with a lot of confidence. You know, and that's the key thing, I said, because most of my horses, they're on the lead or close to it, but he was in a nice spot. And then I saw those horses coming to him at the top of the stretch, and I saw Yoshida, like, usually he's come from way out of it, and he was up there close. I was afraid, like, I wonder if, like, I started thinking maybe he's just a miler or whatever, and I thought, I got a little bit nervous there, but then I could tell that Mike wasn't really asking him to run, and he was just hand riding him. But this time right here, I got to really enjoy the race, you know, like, all right, boy, I'll take it from here, you know. And so I was really proud of his race, and Yoshida ran a huge race.
Yeah.
You know, he ran a really big race. And they said he was good. He was doing really well, and he loves his track. But
just over 147, so, you know, for a mile and an eighth up here, that's notable as well. And that first turn move, Mike Smith is so crafty, because Preservationist comes up on the outside, and he says, no, he comes back, and then he moves up to the on the outside of the flank and gets great position. He is so smart.
Well, the thing is that when we ran this horse in the Alashiba at Churchill Downs, he had him on the lead. He had the one hole. And that's one thing about McKenzie. He's always drawn poorly. And so he's always in the inside one or two. And in the Alashiba at Churchill, he put him on the lead. And it was, and he didn't like being out there. He doesn't like to be asked. He doesn't want to be asked like that. And he was out of his rhythm. So Mike grabbed him and let that horse go, and then that's when he realized that's the way he wants to run. It only took him about 9.5 starts to figure that out. And last time, he was just inside and just...
Met mile,
he was just... Yeah. It was
a lot of people thought he was best that day.
He was way the best that day, and that was so frustrating. But Mike, you know, he came back, and he said, you know, if I would have just waited 2 more strides, I could have just tilted him out, and I thought he was going to do... But he went in, and then he just got worse and worse. And then he made a run, and then Thunder Snow came across, and he had to go around him and run by him. And that's one of his best races. But, you know, he's run, you know, 2 big races. But I think now that he, you know, we've figured him out, and I feel happy about it. And I've trained him a little bit differently, and I think I've got him figured out also.
How was he this morning?
He looked great. I mean, he looked great after the race, and boy, he looks like, you know, he looks bright. Didn't take a lot out of him, and
I hear they had a big crowd down at the barn.
They had a few people there come to see it, and so it was so funny. They wanted to take a picture of him with the roses. He's scared to death of the roses. He's scared of the roses. We put him in the front, and he wouldn't go. So then I put him by the door, and he came out. So he just ducked back in. But you know the funny thing about that horse, he's so quirky. He was really quirky as a 2-year-old. He used to swish his tail when you hit him. Got a spider on there.
Oh, there's always bugs around here.
So my wife, she has all these horses so spoiled. She'll show up in the mornings with these little baby carrots, and she talks to them in a high voice, like, how's my babies? And they all come out. So yesterday, he's walking in the ring, and I hear him. He's nickering, and I've never heard him nickering. And I said to the groom, he goes, Jill went, how's my baby? And he thought she wanted to care. And he started nickering at her. I said, hey, Jill, you can't be doing that in the paddock.
This horse supposed like to be a Pavlovian response now.
Yeah, he was nickering in the paddock. It was so funny. He's, you know, such a funny guy. But you know what? The most important thing is that this horse, he needed to win like a proper grade one. Yeah. I mean, that was a huge race. I had a lot of pressure on me. And he was named after a dear friend of all of us.
Talk a little bit about that.
This Brad McKenzie, and he was like, I met him in college, and he was like one of my brothers. He was, he was there for all my children, all my nephews, and everybody called him Uncle Brad. I mean, that's how close he was. Funny guy, and he's the kind of guy that just had a big heart, and he was always in, you know, our inner circle, my biggest fan. I remember winning my first Kentucky Derby with Silver Charm. I looked down, and he's just crying. He's just bawling. Big, tough guy, just bawling. That's the kind of guy he was. He was a great friend.
Worked at Los Al?
He worked at Los Alamitos, ran it. He's so funny. He had a great personality. I remember he did this speech one time, and he says, let me tell you about Bob Baffert, how close we are. He said, if he needed a kidney, I would give him my kidney. And if I needed a kidney, he would tell me, I will find you a kidney. I mean, that's the kind of guy he was.
That's good.
You know, but, you know, I thought about him, and every when he went in the gate, you know, we all said, all right, Big Brad, let's get him, you know. We were going to call him Big Brad or McKenzie, you know, but he was a big guy. And so somebody asked me afterwards, and I just got very emotional. And I just talked to his mother a couple of weeks ago, and she's 90-some years old, and this horse is keeping her going.
Oh, that's nice, because, again, to put the grade one at Saratoga on the resume for him had to be special. What's next for McKenzie?
You know, I don't know. I really hadn't planned it out, you know. I was actually, if he would have won the Met Mile, I was just going to keep him in California. But then when he got beat, I said, we need something big. So we took the chance, brought him up here, and just threw him right with all the tough horses. And so it's unfortunately that Thunder Snow, you know, he's scratched. You don't want to see that, you know, because I know as a trainer, you know, the horses get sick or they get something
happens. Morning of a race, it's over.
Yeah, it's just tough, you know. Yeah. But it's one of those things where, you know, it's too bad. They were all pretty disappointed.
Yeah. But it was a nice win by McKenzie. Let's move on and talk a little bit, because another big race up here at Saratoga coming up in a few weeks, and we want to get a little update and see if maybe Game Winner is headed up here. We'll take a look at the Los Alamitos Derby from July 13th. Game Winner is going to be the number one horse. And I'll tell you, as I have walked around the facility the past 3 weeks, people obviously recognize you from TV, so there's a lot of conversation about the races and what's coming up and whatnot. A lot of people are hoping Game Winner comes up. They're thinking he looks good for the Traverse. What's the game plan coming up for Game Winner?
Yeah, he's definitely coming up.
Okay.
You know, that's the plan right now. And he's doing really well right now. It's just disappointing. His spring races were a little bit disappointing. But I love the way he's moving. I think he's training really well. And so if he gets on that plane, that means he's doing really, really well. Because we don't ship to school him.
Somebody wrote yesterday on Twitter, Bob Baffert doesn't show up in Saratoga as a tourist.
Exactly. But... But you know what? You know what was great? It's coming in here and seeing all the people that showed up yesterday.
40,000.
The back, it was just packed. Because I came in here around 3:30. You know, I always like come in right before the race. But it was just, it was so, it's great to see, like, when they went in the gates, one of the owner's wife, she goes, oh, my God, look at all the people. It was like felt like I was at the Kentucky Derby. You know, it was just packed and festive, and everybody's excited. And I don't have to tell you how they love their racing here. But you know, but they love, like most fans, they want to see good racing, good horses, and they had some good ones.
Yeah, I always say that fans up here are so savvy. The winners come back, and there's applause, justifiably so, for big performances. And McKenzie was one of those horses yesterday. Let's touch on one other three. I want to go back to the Haskell, Mucho Gusto, running second to Maximum Security, the 7, Mucho Gusto, the 5, potential travelers for mucho gusto?
No, I'm thinking about maybe the Parks, the Penn,
oh,
Penn
okay.
Derby.
Yeah, Park that makes Derby. Sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, he ran, he really stepped it up that day. We thought he was doing really well. Maximum Security, though, he just was not, they could have gone around again. He was not going to let us by. And we were really proud of our horse. He ran great, you know. I thought we had him run first or second. I said, I'm going to send him up there. I told the owner, says, I don't know if I can win it. I mean, if Maximum Security doesn't show up, we can beat him. He didn't show up the time before. He got beat. But I knew Jason Service was going to have him ready for that, you know. So, but, you know, we were proud, you know. For a little instant, it looked like we might beat him. But I just think he's a, you know, he's a top horse. And, you know, he is the best three-year-old out there.
Yeah, at this point, again, with the Pennsylvania Derby and the Travers coming up, there's still the potential to maybe oust the king, but right now he looks at the top of his game. But again, game winner. A lot of folks are looking forward to that visit up here.
Well, I don't think the owner would mind if he got ousted by one of his other horses.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Let's also, I want to hit on one from Del Mar just last week, last Sunday, because immediate impact is a sibling to Arrogate. So this was a pretty nice debut performance. The immediate impact is going to be the number six horse here. And again, this is the career debut. Give us your thoughts before the race. What were your expectations for this sibling to Arrogate? And what were your feelings after the race? This was a pretty good performance. Chart
yeah,
margin
was,
just under seven lengths.
No, she was just, I mean, she had been working really well. And she'd been really moving in the mornings. You know, she tipped herself off. The really good ones, they always tip themselves off in the mornings. And we hadn't really been that hard on her. And she did that just on all class. Came back. What I loved about her race is that when she came back, she wasn't really blowing that hard. You know, the really good ones, they can handle it. You can see with the way she galloped out there. Like, I mean, she looked very expensive, you know. And I like that, you know. So she's going to, you know, as long as she's, you know, they've got to stay healthy and everything. But she came out of it really well. And she'll run back in the debutante at Del Mar. But the horse that won the Serrano yesterday, she's a really good filly too. That I can't think of her name right now, but Simon Callahan trains her, but she looked pretty impressive.
So the game plan for immediate impact, the debutante out at Del Mar. Any two-year-olds potentially up here for the hopeful or spinaway?
You know what? The next couple of weeks, I'm going to run some horses, break their maidens, and I might split them up. And so maybe the spin away or the, you know, maybe split them up.
Want to touch on 1 2-year-old. And again, has it been named? The sibling or the progeny of Curlin Achieving, it was the sales topper down at Gulfstream. We talked to you down there. We were there that day. And when you came on the set, you said that horse is training now. So named?
No, he doesn't have a name yet. They haven't named him. They usually like to wait right before the name. The Coolmore gang, they want to know how good he is before they put a name on there, you know. And so, but he's doing really well. After the sale, they gave him some time off. I just got him up. He's worked like a couple easy halves. You know, he won't run at Del Mar. I'll run him probably during the, in October, in the fall, just taking my time, because he's a horse that, you know, has a lot of potential, more of a two-turn classic looking kind of horse, but he has a lot of speed. And so the thing is about him, he was one of the last horses that Jim Krupe sold, and then he passed after that, and I talked to him for a long time after that, and he was telling me, man, Bob, I hope you have good luck with that horse, and sort of sad. It'll be emotional for, I think, you know, the connections there. Benny Viola, you know, he's got a piece. We were talking about yesterday. I talked about J.J. Krupe, and he got emotional. But for some reason, we have these horses that are making us so emotional, you know. And I really like that horse. He looks really, really good. He looks every bit of his purchase price right now. So that's good.
All right, looking forward to that one. And it's nice when horses can kind of keep the memories alive of those special people. Just talk for a moment. McKinsey was a sales purchase. Obviously, the sales topper down at Gulfstream. McKinsey, I think, was the if I read the last.
No, I bought him in the. I bought him in September, yearling sale.
Yeah, but he was a sales purchase. He wasn't a 2-year-old, but I think I read he was the last horse through the.
He was the last horse. The second
gotta
day.
Gotta stick around.
I was sticking around, and I was just you know a lot of horses. I don't get to see him in the back, and so I just try to. I'm there for the first one that goes in the ring, to the last, and once in a while I'll head out because they'll bring about 30 of them in the back. I'll take it and I'll go look at a horse. But he was the last one in the sale. And I remember somebody said, "Man, Bob, you're really working it hard." I said, "Well, you never know, you know." And I saw him coming in there. I said, "Man, he looks good." And I knew the mother. She was a nice. She hadn't produced anything, and Street Sense was sort of cooling off. And I liked, you know, a lot of these stallions. They'll have a couple hot ones, and then. Their first year, and then all of a sudden they had Zenyatta and all these good horses. Then they cool off, and then you have to wait a few years because that's when they breed the good mares after that. So, and I saw him because, man, he was just beautiful. I mean, just beautiful. And it was like 70,000. It was almost like I dropped the hammer, and all of a sudden somebody around there started bidding and got him for 170.
Still,
you know, so
give him what he's done.
It was like, I'm not letting go now. I've been, you know, he's so beautiful. So, but it's one of those things we got lucky. And, you know, the thing is, you buy these yearlings and you just hope that one of them pays for all of them. And I think he's going to pay for a lot of mistakes. Well, that's what this business is all about.
You've had plenty that have paid for a lot of them. I had a bunch of questions. You'll be here, obviously, Monday and Tuesday for the sale across the street. And I had some questions there, but we're running late. So just before we go, though, I pulled up some video, and the guys will show it as we're talking here. I was here when I was a fan early on. I was here for Affirmed and Aladar in the Traverse, but that's not my favorite moment. My favorite moment was a few years ago. My all-time racetrack favorite moment, American Pharoah here, the morning before the Traverse, the workout. We're back here doing TV, and people just flowing in. They were three deep on the backstretch rail back here, and we're showing some of the American Pharoah here. But the workout in the morning was just incredible. This is actually race day. Yeah. But the workout in the morning was, it was a crowd that was worthy of an afternoon. Thousands of people here. And as I say, it was my favorite memory at the racetrack. What are your feelings?
I was so overwhelmed by that. The first time I've been so overwhelmed, I go, wow. And you know what? We sort of got caught up in it. I wish I could just take that moment back because usually we trained them early. Earlier in the morning when it's quieter and they left it open and my exercise rider and I sent a pony with him. I shouldn't have sent a pony because he thought he was going to work with all the crowd. My exercise rider said, "You be careful, don't go too fast." And he got up there and they put the cam on his, and then he and usually he keeps his stirrups lower. Well, he put his stirrups up so he could look good. And I mean, he looked unbelievable that day, but he went way too fast. He galloped too fast, came back to the barn. I mean, if the race would have been that day, he would have won the Travers for fun. But I think it took a lot of steam out of him, and I learned a lot from that. And look at the crowd.
It was incredible.
I could not believe it. But if I would have just sent him out there without the pony, I would have made the difference. He thought he was going to breeze, and when he turned him loose, he just took off. And he looked awesome coming by there.
Yeah.
Oh, when I got back to the barn, he was blowing hard. He was drank a lot of water. And I go, oh. And when I went to saddling that day, I could tell he wasn't like, you know, he was like. But you know what? That was one of the most courageous races.
Oh, absolutely.
He ran. He was completely empty. He was empty at the top. And he just hung in there. And he wasn't going to let that frost get by him. And then the other horse came way on the out. He never saw him. But that was one of his most courageous races he ran.
Yeah, absolutely.
Only the great ones can do that.
And again, it comes back in the Breeders' Cup and just validates everything. So
that was
all's well that ends well.
But we know what? When I flew him back to California, there was nobody there to meet him at the barn. They just drop you like it was tough. They forget about you really quickly here.
As I say, though, one of my most favorite moments of the racetrack with the morning and the big crowd. Bob, again, we're running late, so we'll let you go.
I know it's
going to be a busy weekend. Congratulations on the great victory yesterday. Look forward to you coming back for the Travers.
Thank you, sir.
Bob Baffert. All right, we'll take a break. More on Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning. Stay tuned.
got it. Watch me. I got it. Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got a move that tells me what to do.
In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning. Again, a Steve Bickless Loose on the Lead, wishing Steve well wishes. And as I say, he hopes to be in here next week, but I am solo. Thanks again to Bob Baffert for taking time this morning after the big win yesterday. Certainly a busy weekend for him as he will be participating at the sales tomorrow and Tuesday night as well. And as I say, we appreciate the visit. Also appreciate the visit from Executive VP at the Breeders' Cup Racing and Nominations, Dora Delgado. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks so very much.
How are you enjoying your Saratoga visit?
Love it. I was just telling Teresa it's been so beautiful since we've been here. The weather is outstanding. I usually come here and it's muggy and buggy and, you know,
last week
muddy, right. But it's really been lovely this time. The weather today is just amazing.
Yeah, the last couple of days, it's really been perfect. And I said to somebody in the winner's circle, I mentioned this on the handicapping show earlier, after the win in the Whitney by McKenzie, the racing has just been great. I mean, yesterday, McKenzie, Kafefi, Friday, Concrete Rose. Last week, we had Imperial Hint, who looked amazing. The racing has just been fabulous.
Incredible horses, and it's really why Breeders' Cup partners with NYRA on so much of the challenge program. We have 16 challenge races among the NYRA tracks. You know, kicking off here with the Whitney and still, you know, plenty more to go. So that it's, you know, over $1 million in challenge entry fees just here in New York.
Yeah, we'll hit on the challenge and talk a little bit about that in a moment. Before we do that, I just want to, as I do often with folks on the show, I do a little research, pull up the Twitter feed, and at the top of your Twitter feed, pin there a picture. I'm guessing this is your grandfather, and that's how you got into the game. You say, yeah. Granddaughter of a lifelong trainer.
Yeah, my grandfather was Tony Basile, trained for Bwamazon Farm for many years. So we spent our whole childhood going from, you know, New York tracks to Monmouth to Arlington, down to Gulfstream, back to Keeneland. It was quite the education.
And so you spent a lot of time at the barn, I'm assuming?
Yes, quite a bit. We loved going down for the Aiken Spring Trials.
And, oh, sure.
And he had an apartment over the barn, and we stayed there. And, you know, the sound of the horses waking up in the morning, it was just tremendous experience.
Yeah, very good. And you've been at the Breeders' Cup from day one,
from
essentially.
Day one, yeah. I started in 1983. They had just gotten organized. We were in the basement of the Blood Horse. You know, it was very modest beginnings, you know, from where we are now.
And there were big hopes that nobody knew whether they would come to fruition or not, but certainly they have.
They really have. You know, we started off as one day with seven races, $10 million, and now we're, you know, a two-day event, 14 graded stakes races, and $30 million in purses and awards. So it's been a lot of effort, but it's been a tremendous joy. We've really enjoyed bringing this championship to the American racing public. And part of the charm of the event was the fact that it would move around and give fans all over the country exposure to a chance to attend.
Yeah, great couple of days of racing. Everybody looks forward to it. Again, it's one of those multiple Christmases we have during the year. Kentucky Derby, Triple Crown season up here at Saratoga, and then Breeders' Cup towards the end of the year. Some of those days we all look forward to, and part of looking forward to it is the horses that make it into the race, and part of that is the Breeders' Cup Challenge. Talk a little bit about that and the Win and Year In scenario.
That's true. We started the Win and Year In program in 2007, and at the beginning it was not a true Win and Year In because it only gave you an automatic selection, but it didn't pay your entry fee. So we realized very quickly it needed to modify and change. The current program has 86 races in 11 countries around the world. It provides over $5 million in free entry fees. So it's true win and you're in. You win, you get, you know, all expense trip paid here to the Breeders' Cup. You get to run for free. We get the owners. You know, this is part of the appeal of these races is that you get those free entry fees. But we realized that there's more that we have to offer. There is such high competition for these grade greatest stakes runners around the world. Mm-hmm. You know, so we added a lot more benefits for the owners, free complimentary, you know, car transfers and hotel stays and lots of parties and events, because it really needed to be this enhanced experience in order to get people to commit to coming to the championships and have that international flavor, which is so important.
Whitney yesterday obviously gets McKenzie the win in year in, but a little earlier this week on the international side, last year's champion, two-year-old Too Darn Hot, stamped his ticket to the Breeders' Cup Mile, and it sounds like that'll be their game
plan.
And I am going to pull up last year's Breeders' Cup turf, because all of us lucky enough to be alive during this time period and enjoy Enable. This was one of many nice performances from her. But to come over after a couple of ARC wins, she's the number two horse here. Again, facing the boys in the Breeders' Cup turf. Enable, the number two horse, gets it done last year down at Churchill Downs. And again, I mentioned Too Darn Hot this year. Part of the allure of the Breeders' Cup is bringing together these international fields. Talk about your job as part of the nominations and getting horses to come. What does it take to allure these internationals over and make for these nice, big, competitive international fields?
Yeah, it's an incredible recruitment effort that starts basically after the Belmont. We go Belmont to the Breeders' Cup. It's just full-out recruitment. We have my vice president of racing that works for me is Josh Christian. He's based over in Europe for most of the year. He goes to all the big events. Of course, Craig Fravel and Drew Fleming on our team are also over there. We stay here and domestically, you know, I'm here this weekend. I'm going to the Million right after that and then on to Del Mar. So there's just an all-out recruitment effort. You know, we always say it's very easy to get the first seven in a race, but it's the next seven that you really got to convince they have a legitimate shot of being in there. You know, nobody wants to come to the Breeders' Cup and be embarrassed, but at this level, you know, 14 spots is really, there's a lot of good horses out there, and there's a lot of horses that just need to take their chance. So it's a big effort to make sure we get those full fields. But Breeders' Cup's been very lucky. You know, we average about 11 and a half starters per race, so it's a very good effort. And we started paying down to the eighth finish position, so it's, we want to make sure that when you come, you have a good experience. You don't leave thinking, you know, that was, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have taken my shot, because everybody deserves to be there.
Yeah, and again, a lot of international runners as well that make it fun and intriguing and add to the handicapping puzzle. Big fields, great value. I'm assuming there are probably some reps over in Europe that are kind of chasing down people on a regular basis there,
all
too.
All the time. We have the International Racing Bureau that works for us, Adrian Beaumont. He's here this weekend with some horses from Aidan O'Brien. They definitely act as our liaison over there. They make the transition for our European trainers so easy to come and be able to compete. They, you know, handle everything from their licensing to making sure their training schedules are on point. So they come to the Breeders' Cup for the same amount of time we're there. We'll expect about 45 international competitors to show up this year at Santa Anita. So it's a big contingent. We work with the USDA on getting a quarantine compound ready for them so they can clear and start training immediately, and they'd have no lag time, because it's very important when you bring international runners that they don't suffer any effects from the long travel periods, that they are able to go out and start training immediately.
Yeah, so. And again, they add to the fun and the intrigue and the handicapping
Absolutely.
Puzzle that makes it so much fun for handicappers and bettors, but just to enjoy the game as a fan as well and see a horse like Enable, who was just fabulous last year.
Tremendous.
You know, two ARCs.
And looks like she is going for her third,
that
so
arc,
that's just
incredible.
Amazing.
And that race a couple of weeks ago with her, there was a video online from the inside of watching the just incredible. So
she's
she was
amazing.
Fun and certainly fun in the Breeders' Cup last year. You know, you kind of alluded to it. A lot of moving parts with the Breeders' Cup. And given that, as you say, it bounces around to different venues, you folks come in and really kind of take over the venue for a few days. So that obviously presents, again, part of that moving part scenario as well.
It's funny, you know, people, you know, ask, when you say you work for the Breeders' Cup, well, what do you do for the rest of the year? The rest of the year is a lot of operational planning. You know, we try to get our host events about 3 years out. So that we've got three events kind of concurrently being planned at the same time. But it's a lot of preparation. It's a lot of operations. We do, like I said, a lot of enhanced experiences. We set up a breakfast marquee every morning for the participants. A lot of, you know, we are expecting probably with our owners about 3,000 participants.
Oh, wow, is that right?
All told,
well,
between between the 2 days of racing and the owners, trainers, jockeys, and breeders, and we all their guests, it's about 3,000. We book over 1,200 rooms, you know, credential almost 5,000 people. So it's a massive operation, and the Breeders' Cup staff is really actually quite tiny. We're about 25, 26 people, but we make do with a lot of consultants and contractors and people that take their vacation and come to work for me at the Breeders' Cup every year. Like it's that's how they want to spend their vacation is working those 2 weeks. So it's an amazing group that we pull together.
You talk about credentials. I'm assuming media credentials are a little bit different than a normal racing day in America as well, because with international entrants, you typically will have international interest with the media as well.
Tremendous amount. We have about 8,800 credentialed media, including television, radio, and written publications. But like when we have a Japanese contingent, and we're thinking we might have actually five Japanese runners this year, an incredible amount. They really come over in force, you know, so that could add another 100 right there, you know, because they want to cover it for their Green Channel back home.
Again, doing some bio information for you last night. So you're on the board of directors, Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, along with people like Boyd Browning and Marty Panza from NYRA and Donna Brothers, a number of notable people on the board there. But again, Thoroughbred Aftercare has become important to the industry over the past 10 or 12 years or so, and safety and integrity important to the industry as well, and important to the Breeders' Cup also.
It's incredible. This is our number one priority, the safety, security, and integrity of the event. We were the first large event to start doing out-of-competition testing and hiring our own security team. We put a 72-hour watch on these horses, 72 hours out from post. They are all guarded by their individual security officers who maintain logs. We have a veterinary team made up of 14 individuals from around the country, regulatory vets. So instead of just looking at horses on race day, we're looking at them all week long. Every time they go to the track, there's some vet's eyes on them. They come to the shed row. They do physical exams. They put their hands on them. We just want to make sure that every horse not only is running at the peak of their ability, but they have been seen to, and that there's a level of integrity so that the other trainers know that there's nothing untoward going on, and that everybody is on the up and up. And, you know, we've never had anything, go wrong at the Breeders' Cup, thank goodness, with the security. You know, they're very vigilant. We also have a team of Breeders' Cup investigators on top of the individual officer. So it's a massive operation just to make sure that that we're making sure that these animals are cared for at the highest level. And we just bring them all together to make sure that happens. And the TAA work is so important. I'm such an advocate for aftercare. You know, some of these athletes that have just run and run and run and have given their all deserve a good retirement. And if they can't be retrained for another career, you know, given a rehoming for sure.
Give us a little update what's coming up as far as Breeders' Cup Challenge winning your in events. And typically, it seems like as I went through the schedule last night online, most or all are NBC covered as well.
That's right. We've still got four shows, I think, from here from Saratoga and Belmont on NBC. But we have, 11 all told. There's be 13 and a half hours of live coverage of the Breeders' Cup Championships themselves. But the NBC shows that are coming on are just packed with great racing. Yeah. I mean, tremendous. We have five more classic challenge races left to run. So, you know, we've only gotten through half of those so far. Incredible. We go straight from here when we ran the Whitney Super Win by McKenzie, and we're on to the Arlington Million next week, where we have both the Million and the Beverly Diaz as win and you're in. So it's just nonstop pretty much from now until we get through Keeneland in the fall.
Great to get McKenzie in, because you get a guy like Bob Baffert. I supposed to get him off about 10 minutes earlier than I did, but I
told him he was taking all my time.
Yeah, you get him in and he gets going, and so he's
great. I'm so happy for them. And it was their anniversary yesterday.
Oh, there you go. There was a lot going on, and again, that was fun to see a win there by McKenzie in a win in your event. So again, it looks like things are shaping up nicely for the Breeders' Cup as far as those win in your events. Again, going over to Goodwood just the other day, Too Darn Hot, as I say, the champion 2-year-old for last year. That'll be a nice addition to the Breeders' Cup Mile. So some winning your in tickets already stamped, some still yet to come. And again, you can watch some of those events on NBC coming up. Dora, we appreciate the visit this morning. Certainly wish you and everybody at the Breeders' Cup good luck going forward.
So
look
much.
Forward to the 2 days of racing coming up.
We do too. We're ready for it.
All right.
You so much.
Thanks again.
All right.
We'll take a break. Coming up, Jamie Roth, again, one of the part owners of Covfefe, another really nice performance at Saratoga yesterday in the test. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
You like free money? Well, Capital OTB gives its players plenty of opportunities to cash in. At Capital OTB, there are so many ways for horse players to receive bonus dollars by simply participating in promotions such as our bankrolls, bounty bets, online handicapping contests, and much, much more. Plus, with Capital OTB's player rewards program, you get actual cash back. So what are you waiting for? Log on today at CapitalOTB.com or CapitalOTBBet.com and claim your free money.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead, a Steve Bickless Loose on the Lead. I've said it a few times already, though, wishing Steve a speedy recovery. Hopefully he's in next week, but again, recovering from some eye surgery earlier this week. On the mend, as I've texted back and forth a couple of times, and we'll hope for him to be back sooner rather than later, but taking time to make sure things mend appropriately. Waiting on Jamie Roth. She is on the way, but in the meantime, we will take a look at some of the stakes action from yesterday that I didn't have scheduled to replay, but now that we have a chance, we'll watch some of that. Again, nice undercard stakes action. The Troy from yesterday, obviously disappointing to scratch a World of Trouble. But both World of Trouble and Thunder Snow, I think were kind of, minor setbacks that won't be keeping them away from the track too long. So that's good news. But no World of Trouble. I liked, once World of Trouble scratched, Pure Sensation, the number three. I thought Disco Partner, the number two, was also potentially very interesting. I should have taken an extra look. With the scratch of World of Trouble, I should have taken an extra look at Leinster. We had George Arnold, Rusty Arnold, on a couple of days back on Racing Across America, and he said, coming out of that Churchill race, he thought the horse would probably fit. They were going to see Leinster will wind up to be the winner, the number six horse. The leader here is Rocket Heat, taking them into the stretch. That one fades in the lane and gets passed subsequently, with Leinster winning, Disco Partner second, Pure Sensation running third. But Leinster, chart margin of only 3/4 of a length, but boy, it's a nice run from that one to get up under Tyler Gaffleone. Again, coming out of a optional claim or a nice win down at Churchill. And as I say, Rusty Arnold said, you know what, we wanted to see what we had. Well, they've seen. This one fits. He alluded to potentially going down to Kentucky Downs for the next start for Leinster. We'll see where that one shows up. But again, off of the optional claimer last time, broke the maiden a couple of starts back, actually, in an allowance event. This horse has had 15 starts, only 2 wins, but the last 2 in turf sprints, the last 3 in turf sprints, including the Troy. So you would have to think this is a horse that kind of has found the surface, has found the specialty, and will be interesting. We'll see where Rusty Arnold goes with Leinster next. But again, he alluded to Kentucky Downs, and keep your eyes on that one for a start down there, because again, seems to be in very, very good form. In the lore yesterday, 100 grand on the turf at a mile and a 16th. I had it labeled at the top of my page as a tough race, but my three ran 1-2-3 and kind of juggled up order. I liked it 8-2-5. It comes out 2-5-8 with Kieran. Kieran and the Godolphin runner, Lucullen, getting it done. The number two horse under Luis Saez. Chart margin of only a nose over Sacred Life, the number five. That Chad Brown horse was coming in from Europe. I thought that horse would be live too. Those two were. It was a ding-dong battle. We're coming under the wire. You kind of had to keep your fingers crossed whether you had the two or the five that you got it. But when the photo was developed, it was number two, Lucullen. The horse that I had on top, Ticonderoga, runs third. Top of the stretch, I think the eight. I mean, look where the eight is right now. So to get up for third, but I, again, at the top of the stretch, or maybe mid-stretch, I thought Ticonderoga was going to make a nice run to maybe get up there. You see, swings to the outside and kind of is starting, and I thought right here I was going to get it done with Ticonderoga, but the two and the five kind of ran away a little bit. They just got the jump on Ticonderoga, and they will again have that nice ding-dong battle with Lucullen getting it done. And 2-5-8, Lucullen in the lure. Also take a look at yesterday's Della Rose. That was after the two big stakes races. The Della Rose went off as race number 10. Mile on the grass. I had it juggled up in here. I had it 7-8-9-5. It came out 8-7-9 with Got Stormy getting it done. Got Stormy and Capital Temptress for me. I was taking a shot with Capital Temptress on an 8-1 morning line. That one eventually went off at 5-2. The favorite at 2-1 was Got Stormy. I thought Capital Temptress was interesting at the morning line price. At 5-2, I still wasn't going against, but Got Stormy was probably the one to beat. And as we see the stretch run here, probably one to beat as you handicap, but as you see the stretch run, was the one to beat getting it done there in the lure. So, in the Della Row. So it was 8-7-9, Got Stormy, Capital Temptress, Stella de Camelot getting it done in the Della Rose. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Jamie Roth will join us. Again, one of the co-owners of Covfefe, the really nice winner of the test yesterday. We'll talk about that and more right after this. Stay tuned.
It's been home to some of the sport's biggest moments, monumental achievements, and extraordinary records. At Santa Anita, we'll set another before the first gate even opens, as the Breeders' Cup returns for a record 10th time. This November, the stars will shine, champions will be crowned, and when the unbelievable happens, you'll want to be there to see it. The Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Visit Rivers Casino and Resort, the Capital Region's only destination for live table game action, and the hottest new slots paying out millions. And they're off. Horse betting is now at Rivers Casino and Resort with Capital off-track betting terminals and live tellers located just off the gaming floor at Van Slick's. Get in on all the action at Rivers Casino and Resort.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead. As promised before the break, joined now by one of the co-owners of Covfefe, Jamie Roth. Good morning.
Good morning.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That was phenomenal yesterday. Before we get into that, talk a little bit about LNJ Foxwoods, the initials of you and your parents. How'd you get into the game?
I was just a fan that fell in love with Rachel Alexandra,
And
probably not alone there.
No, definitely not alone. And I don't think I realized, but there was a love for sports and a love for animals, and that's what thoroughbreds are. And I just happened to be in the right place in the right time in Del Mar and met my bloodstock agent, Alex Solis. And a month later, my parents and I were in the business.
So. One of my all-time favorite races up here was Rachel Alexander in the Woodward.
Yeah, she was just amazing. I mean, she got me in the game. This is exactly why I'm here.
Yeah, I was standing in the back of the clubhouse seating with a camera, and it's still on YouTube, I think, as she came down the straight, and the crowd goes berserk and continues to go berserk as she gallops out and comes back. It was just one of those Saratoga moments that was very special. Yeah. And you had one of them yesterday.
Yes.
So let's touch on that. Let's watch the test yesterday and get your thoughts. The number three, Covfefe, a horse I like quite a bit. I had Brad Cox the rest of the year. We're in the studio down in Albany. So I had him by phone after the Pimlico race. And I said, got to be pointing to the test, right? He said, we have some other ideas in between. But yeah, test is there. Yesterday, Serengeti Empress, all heart. She's the number one, but Covfefe gets the best of her, and really a nice performance. Bellafina running third. But again, take us through the race as you sat and watched number three Covfefe yesterday in the test.
My thoughts?
Yes.
I
it's all a blank now.
Yeah. I really didn't know how it was all going to shape up. I knew that we needed to be close to the lead, but I didn't want to get into a speed duel.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of people thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
But this is a clever ride.
Joelle gave her just an unbelievable ride. I was feeling good at this point, that we weren't engaging in that match race per se. And around the far turn when she made her move, I felt confident, but I mean, this is horse racing. You know how it goes. Sometimes it just doesn't go your way. And, right here, I'm feeling confident. And,
how confident?
I know I'm gonna run one or two.
Yeah.
But I feel pretty confident here. But like you said, Serengeti Empress, I mean, what a filly. She ran her heart out, and she tries to come back. But at this point, I feel like we're gonna get it done.
I had her in.
And then
play.
You see at the end. I mean, I think she starts to stride pretty nicely away. But I mean, again. Credit to Serengeti Empress.
No, that was a great performance, and again, I have to the Pimlico. Go back to the Pimlico performance, because that was mind-boggling.
I mean, the Pimlico performance. So, after the Frisette, we gave her some time off, which was much deserved. We asked a lot of her, going from a maiden race and flying her to Belmont, which is a track that some horses don't love. The time off for her was great, and then she came back at Keeneland and had that allowance win, which was tough. I don't think any of us kind of knew how she'd run in the Pimlico race. I think we were hoping she'd run back to the ability that we always thought she had. I knew she was training well from Brad, but I mean, you never expect that to happen. It was just a mind-blowing race. But you worry after they run that kind of race, are they shot? You know, like, are they going to come back running again? So.
And then the follow-up, she ran third. That was against two good older horses, Mia Mischief and Awestruck. So given the shot there, you know, the third-place finish, and she just missed second. She just got nipped for second and as close at the wire as you could. That was a nice performance.
That was a very nice performance. You know, a credit to Alex Solis and Jason Litt and Brad. You know, that was a tough spot to put her in, but we needed to get that kind of bounce out of the way after the Pimlico race.
And sometimes just the calendar plays into if you're shooting for the test,
I kind of just wanted to go right to the test and like, no, you really got to get a race in between that. And you kind of went into it hoping you win, but knowing that you're asking a lot to go against older fillies. And now looking back, that was such a good move to get her to the test and get the win yesterday. It was all, I think, because of that race.
Did any of the team have concern about the 7 furlongs?
I mean, yeah. Everybody. I think we all wondered whether she could get the distance. But I think, you know, she showed she's got some amazing ability, and she did it. So, but yes, it was a concern.
You seen her this morning, I assume. How'd she come out of it?
She's great. She was actually in her stall looking out the window at the horses on the training track. like didn't even want to hang out with us. And then Blake Cox brought her over, and she was great. She was eating, happy.
I think so. We actually pulled up from your Twitter feed perhaps a shot of you hanging out with her at some point,
yeah.
Which is nice. What is her demeanor?
Well,
I like the eye look there. It's like, oh, hey,
she,
my nose.
She's always been sweet, and then after the Pimlico race, she came out of that a little aggressive. But so I kind of yesterday when I saw her stood back a little bit from her. But today she was a sweetheart. So I mean, I think she knows when it's game time, and I think she's starting to really figure it out. She's a smart filly. So.
It sounded like from the post race comments I read this morning, it sounded like a little time off her now.
I think so. She'll train up here. It sounds like Brad said she'll stay up here, train, but nothing serious. Just keep her going, but no breezes right now, I don't think.
Talk a little bit about buying her at the sale and how that all transpired.
You know, I wasn't there. It was Alex and Jason and some other people bidding on her, and they loved her, but at a price, and she kind of just fell in our lap. And I mean, man, that's an amazing gift.
How do you play the sales? Will you be over here Monday and Tuesday night?
Yes. My family really, we love being up here, but we let our guys and Madison and Scott do their job, and we go over the short list before the sale, and we talk about what we need, what we need, what we don't need, we just come up with a strategy and hope that we can buy the ones that we like, and it's tough.
Especially up here.
But that's good for the market to be strong and everyone to be interested. So,
do 2-year-old sales at all?
We do, yes. We got shoplifted the Into Mischief Colt of Steve's at Gulfstream sale. So yes, we do.
Well, that's a perfect lead, and I pulled up the win earlier at the meet from Shoplifted, a career debut win. I have to admit, I had the horse just underneath because I put All He's Misbehaving on top.
Okay.
But I put both of them 1-2 because I love Into Mischief first time out of the box.
Right.
Very precocious runners, and it was Into Mischief with Shoplifted. We were talking before, Teresa mentioned it. Cleverly named Shoplifted by Into Mischief out of Shop It. So a very clever name.
Yeah.
But this is a good debut win up at Saratoga. Number one Shoplifted with a good late run there and just kind of runs away from these chart margin at just under 5. Your thoughts on the debut performance?
That was I was surprised how far back we were because, I knew he had speed and he had been training very, very well. So when they opened up a little bit, I was like, oh, okay. I was a little confused. Also, we had Soviet in the race, too. So we had two horses because it's a partnership with Cheyenne Stables and Grandview. And I'm trying to watch both of them, and I see Soviet breaks bad, and he's just in a tough spot. He ran a really good race, actually, I think. But I thought we were in trouble, but then, man, he just... I don't know if the horses in front got tired.
Yeah, I don't think the Always Misbehaving people wanted to go as fast as that. there was quite a duel early.
So I didn't think we'd get there, and then all of a sudden he was there and then striding out. So it was exciting.
You have a game plan for him up here later in the meet?
Yeah, I think it's all goes well, the hopeful.
Yeah, nice, nice. Very, very good. Where are you guys based?
My family lives I live in Manhattan. My parents live on Long Island. And our operations just kind of all over the country, per se.
So
the mayor's in Kentucky and race kind of everywhere.
So New York racing is not new to you necessarily, but still, what's a grade one up at Saratoga mean?
Everything. it's so hard to just win a race. To win a grade one in Saratoga in a town that's so special to my family as well is it means so much. It was one of the best days of my life yesterday.
I was down in the winner's circle, and you all seem to be enjoying it quite a bit, understandably so. I asked Bob Baffert, I'll ask you, how do you celebrate a grade one win in Saratoga? You had a restaurant recommendation?
Salt and Char.
Okay.
Or the Blue Hen. We just went back to the Delphi, and we had dinner at the Blue Hen and then went out and had some drinks.
Yeah, well, you and like a billion other people last night. I said to Bob, downtown was quite...
They ran out of beer.
Oh, well, now you know it's a zoo when they run...
They ran out of beer. For real.
That's pretty good. Big night, obviously, after a grade one win. And as I say, a big night in Saratoga as well. So, Covfefe, there's no set game plan then going forward.
Not really. I think just some time off and then I shoot for the big races, I guess, maybe at the end of the year. I'm not really sure. I just kind of let them make the decisions. But she came out well, and everything's good so far.
Very good. And you said a town that's special to your family, your connection to the Adelphi, right?
Yeah. My father and my brother and some partners of theirs kind of gutted the hotel, which was a historic, it's a historic hotel here, and just kind of renovated it and upgraded it. And
yeah, it's beautiful
it's
now.
It's made it a great spot, and yeah. I think people love it, and it's I'm happy that it's doing well and everyone seems to like it. So
yeah, I've been going there for years, but the renovation, it's great. I mean, it's one of the really, I guess, probably the last of those original hotels that, if people look at those archival pictures of Saratoga and Broadway, they were, for years they've lined the street, those big hotels.
I love
people coming up
the windows on Main Street. It's beautiful.
Yeah, but the Adelphi, again, a great job down there. Yeah. People can stop as well and just kind of enjoy. Don't have to get a hotel room. You can go to Salt and Char or sit in the bar or sit on the porch.
Yeah, it's a great Marcy. Place to, I love Marcy's. It's a good spot to just hang out. It's chill.
After a grade one. Yeah. Which makes it even better. Yeah. Jamie, we really appreciate the visit. Again, congratulations to you and the entire team. As I said, I had Brad on after the Pimlico race, and I was kind of keyed into Covfefe and liked your chances yesterday. I also like the betting public was not quite as keyed in. I liked the price yesterday as well.
I know, right? She won a fourth favorite, I think.
Yeah, what are we looking? $8.50, which I thought was very generous for her talent level.
Horses don't know their odds, so.
We do, and as I say, I was very pleased with the victory. But again, I've kind of been on the grade one test, which just is a traditional kind of queen maker up here. If you look at the list of horses that have won over the years, to put her name on the list, you should be very proud and very happy. I'm happy for you.
Thank you very much. I mean, just so proud of the horse and really an honor to win up here, so.
Wish you the best going forward with Covfefe and Shoplifter as well. Maybe look for that one later in the meet. Good luck, as I say, going forward here and beyond. LJLNJ Foxwoods. Appreciate the visit.
Thank you.
All right, we'll wrap things up for this edition of Loose on the Lead. Again, hopefully next week, Mr. Bick will be back in his seat. Speedy recovery, Steve. We're all thinking about you here over at Saratoga. Thanks to Jamie Roth, Dora Delgado, and, of course, Bob Baffert for joining us this morning. Back Wednesday morning with more programming here live from the backstretch at 9 a.m. We'll see you then.
From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by Thoroughgraph. Everything you need to win. Visit Thoroughgraph.com. The new Colonial Downs and the Virginia Equine Alliance. Hill and Dale. Home of perennial standouts, Curlin, Kitten's Joy, Midnight Loot, and emerging stallions, Violence, Byron, and Army Mule. Visit HillandaleFarms.com for consignments at the 2019 yearling sales. Case Supply, the kitchen and bath professionals across upstate New York. Showrooms in Syracuse, Auburn, and Amsterdam. Make your dream kitchen and bath a reality. Visit CaseSupplyInc.com. And McMahon of Saratoga, standing breakout stallion, central banker, number one in New York and among the nation's leading young sires. Visit McMahonThoroughbred.com.